Okay, today we are going to have another Sefer review. The name of the Sefer is In His Image by Harav Eldad Nakar. I do not know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. This man, Eldad Nakar, I believe is a doctor of holistic medicine. He is an expert on, I don't even know how to pronounce these things, reflexology?
Yes.
What is that?
I don't know.
Reflexology. Holistic. This type of, I mean, it's not exactly your regular.
Is it covered under insurance?
He is obviously from, I only read a few chapters. I can't read the whole book in one shot, much to beyond my. I read a few chapters. It's very obvious. Doesn't he, Maya Haskam? He is a brilliant, brilliant person. Very big Talmud Chacham. He writes in the Hagdamah that this book is the product of 20 years of work. He super analyzes body language. That's what this book is all about. I'm scared to meet this person because just after reading a few of his chapters, by him looking at me and observing me for 2 minutes, he can write a whole analysis of my personality and of my weaknesses and strengths, and it's remarkable.
You say there are experts who can look at you and tell when you're lying, the way your eyes go up.
Absolutely, absolutely. No question about it. No question about it. But he doesn't just look at your eyes. He doesn't just look at your eyes. He looks at every single part of your body. Over and over in this book, he has pictures of real people, famous people, making different types of gestures. Gestures that has a lot of. He analyzes Hitler quite a bit. Quite a bit. He has a whole number of pictures of Hitler in action, with his different various body expressions, gestures, and he analyzes what they mean. He has Stalin and Mussolini and you name it. He goes through a whole collection of.
It's a book,
but what's unique about this book? No, what is unique about this book, and even writes this, is that there are hundreds of books like this out there in the secular world, where you can, they'll analyze, they'll tell you what things mean, but everything here is being interpreted against the backdrop of Chazal. So, and it's very impressive. Now, I think he writes, he's about Tshuva. The name Nakar does seem to sound like a Svardish name. He has a brother, he says Boaz. Boaz is not your typical Ashkenaz. I don't know. We have a picture of him. He looks like, if you wouldn't know, he looks like, you know, he looks like a guy from Florida Park. So, I don't know, but it's your jaw drops. This book was published pretty recently, 2012. So it's a new book, relatively speaking, and it's quite a book. It's a scary book. And let me just share with you a few things. I don't have that much time and that much energy to prepare all that much. But running through a few chapters, I want to share with you some ideas that I came across that I found to be interesting. Now, the first thing he mentions here in this book is principle that it refers to over and over again. I have my little own spin on this, what he calls the fetal principle. He says the perfect, everything in this Chazal. So Chazal looks at everything in a whole different perspective. A person is in a state of purity, the ultimate state of purity, in his mother's womb. That is the time when a person is with the Malach and he learns Kol Torah Kula. Chazal say he's Seifa and he's Seifa Alam Yad Seifa Alam. And it's fascinating that at that point in time in a person's development, his body is in a certain position, the fetal position, where his head is bent as far down as it can possibly go, his legs are raised up as far as it can possibly go, and his arms are clenched, his arms are closed one to the other, and the fists are closed. That, he says, this is his chiddush, which is based upon Chazal. I mean, he has a lot of Ramchal. I mean, he covers Kol Torah Kula in this Sefer. He writes 20 years of work based upon his research, but he's a doctor. This is what he does for a living. It's parnasa. But he's a tremendous Talmud Chacham. As you can see, when he, things that he cites, when he quotes, who he quotes, is that represents the ultimate in body language, the fetal position.
Uh-huh.
Now, I was thinking, after reading this, it made an impression upon me. Now that we've left Sukkos, what has always bothered me, the Chazal describing the Dalad Ninim, what the Dalad Ninim represent. Now, let me ask you, if you were Chazal, and you were telling us to take four minim, and the four minim are going to correspond to certain parts of the body, and you only have four minim to take, and the four minim are going to correspond to different parts of the body, which parts of the body would you select? Okay, I don't know, everyone would probably say something different, but I wouldn't pick the spine. Chazal tells us the lulav represents the spine, and the hadassim represent the eyes, and the aravos represent the lips, and the esrog represents the heart. Different parts of the body. Now, wait, what about the brain? And what about the ears? What about the nose? Isn't the nose a very important feature? Isn't the nose a very important feature in the human...
Because that's two.
What? What are you laughing?
No, I said most people don't use that brain.
I can't breathe life.
Vayipach ba'ap of nishmas chayim. Right.
Why do you do that?
Why?
Because the other ones... The nose doesn't do any of errors, basically.
The nose doesn't...
The ears, you hear of it, speak of it.
Okay.
I see something, the nose doesn't.
You have shmiras enayim, shmiras adibar. Okay, so you can say what you want to say. There's a lot, obviously there's a lot, but it's interesting. If you go take a group of children who never heard this nevesh, and put them in a room, and tell them, we're going to make a new mitzvah, dalad minim, and the dalad minim are going to respond to four parts of the body. And therefore, based upon the dalad minim, we're going to select different types of trees, fruits, whatever it is, and you figure out, tell me the priority, the four things that we should focus on when describing the body. What would they come up with? Probably none of them would come up with the spine, that's for sure. Maybe the eyes, okay, the eyes is the window to the person's soul, okay, maybe the heart, that's a very critical. But where does it come, the spine, where does it come, the eyes, the lips? But he says it very interesting, he said but this really caught my attention, is that when a child is in his mother's womb, the height of the child equals the spine. All parts of the body are bent into the frame of the spine. We look at a person, an adult, a living person, a healthy person. Okay, the spine probably is, 65% of the body, maybe even less because the legs extend all the way down, the head comes up, then there are different very small parts of the spine. We don't look at that spine as critical. That's what the whole life of the person is, in the spine. That. But when you look at the person's stature, the person's height, you don't focus on the spine, but in the fetal position, the spine is the defining height, length of a person. Everything is compressed within the span of the spine. What do Chazal say about a child inside the mother's womb? So I don't know if I have every we're going through the pages here, but a famous Chazal, here it is. Okay, have everything here is only in English. That's the problem. The words of Chazal. He is soifa misoifa oylam viat soifa. Famous Chazal, when a child is in his mother's womb, he's able to see, to gaze from one end of the world to the other. He has the ultimate vision. Obviously, this vision does not mean a physical vision. It means a vision of the mind of comprehension. We don't exactly know what this means. We're not in tune with our neshama at that point in time, but there's a very powerful Chazal. He's soifa, misoifa oylam viat soifa. The eyes. And what else does Chazal tell us about the child in the mother's womb? He learns Torah. Yeah. He learns with the Malach. Torah is kima. We just had this in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. We learn Torah. The Ikar Torah is the Ikar Liman. The Ikar Kima Liman at Torah is to be Maitzi Bepeh. Koyach of Torah Dibor is Torah is Bepeh with your mouth. So it's very interesting. It's not a perfect idea, but there's something to it that when we're focusing on the Dalad Minim and we're focusing on the body, when do we take the Dalad Minim? We'll Lekachtem Lechem Bayom Harishayim. On the first day. It's not the first day. It's the 15th day of the month. Why do we call the Yom HaRishon? Rishon L'Cheshbon Avonos. A fetus is at the ultimate Yom HaRishon. He's at the ultimate state of his life where he's fresh. He's Rishon L'Cheshbon Avonos. And what is a fetus at that point in time? What does Chazal tell us about a fetus? Well, he's telling us that the body language, the height, the span of the fetus is equal to the spine. because everything is shriveled. Chazal tell us the fetus is soifa and soifa over the soifa of the eyes. And the fetus is learning Torah. Torah is always expressed in Chazal through Koyach HaDibur. In order to be Mekayim Talmud Torah, it has to be the Dibur, with the pair, with the lips, with the Dibur. And there's the Leif. The Leif can possibly mean that a child... Okay, I don't know, that represents life. I don't really know how the lathe fits into the... It's not so hard to figure out. The lathe is everything. Everything depends on the heart. The heart is punning. The Yetzer Hara, the Yetzer Tov. Ki Yetzer Lathe Ha'odam Ram in Urav. There's something to the heart.
But the physical heart.
Well, it represents the heart. The Ki Yetzer Lathe Ha'odam. Chazal tells us that a person gets the Yetzer Hara from the time that he's born. When does he get the Yetzer Tov? The Yetzer Tov comes when he's Bar Mitzvah. Famous Bar Mitzvah Josh. When you Bar Mitzvah, you get the Yetzer Tov. But when you're an infant, you right away have the Yetzer Hara. Ki Yetzer Lathe Ha'odam Ram in Urav. That passion of the Yetzer Hara is there from the very, very beginning. So perhaps when you look at a fetus, and you don't look at an adult, and you take into consideration lekachtem lechem bayon harishain rishon lechesh navonos, you know, it makes a little sense. The dalet minim do indeed correspond to the most significant organs or parts of the body of a fetus. After all, the body is shriveled to the height of the spine. That is the entire physical child. What is the child doing? He's seif el mabit mis seif olam yat seif olam, the eyes. What is he doing? Torah. Torah is kimotziyim befer. What is he coming to overcome at that point in time? Ki yetzer leif ha'odam ram in urav, the yetzer hara, which is given to him at the time of birth, at the time of conception, the time when he first can develop. So this is an idea which I just wanted to throw out, which only was triggered through this concept of body motion begins in the perfect position of the human being. The purest position, the purest body position is the fetal position. He develops also later on in the Sefer where he says at that point in time the legs, the head is on the erva. The head, the moyach rests upon the erva, the legs. Erva represents the Yetzer Hara, the Mila, telling a person the goal in life is your machshava, your koyach, your mind should prevail upon your base nature. The erva is the Yetzer Hara. The mind, the field position is on that area. It's the message Hashem is giving the child. Your mind should overcome your passions, your desires. That is the first idea of this sefer. Now he goes into a very... something we take for granted. But when you take a topic and you look at the whole Chazal in a different topic, it has a whole new meaning. We learned this not so long ago, David and Michal. David was transporting the Aron from Kiryas Yearim to Ir David, and David was dancing. And David was dancing like one of his servants. He was dancing in a very open way, ka'achas, one of the words, like one of the slaves, how they would dance. And Michal looked out of the window and saw David and criticized David. How could you go and dance in an undignified way in front of all of the maidservants? And David gave Michal Musar, how dare you speak to me like that? Halavai, I would break forth in dancing even more than what I have done. And it's because of this midah that you, this criticism, that shows there's a defect in your mishpacha. That is exactly why Hashem rejected your father as melech. He took the malchus away from your father and gave it to me. It's okay, it's a very powerful chazal, and you can talk about kavanat Torah, you can talk about being mevazi yourself, but he looks at this, a person who spent his whole life focusing on body language, looks at this as a fundamental disagreement between David and Shaul, over body language. The message body language sends to someone who is looking. Michal, Bashol, felt, it's true, you have to rejoice, but the expressions that you give forth in the type of undignified dancing sends the wrong messages to Klal Yisrael, to the Hamoinam, that's looking up to the Melech as a role model. David felt had a very different approach to the study of body language, of how a person should express himself with his body. Because what is dancing? Dancing is an expression where the soul expresses itself through its body, through its limbs, through. It's just, I'm throwing out short little ideas, Chomer and the Jewish, to think about. There's a fundamental disagreement going on between David and Shaul, how a person should express themselves with their body. To what degree is it proper for a melech and a leader in front of his people? He also explains that this concept of body language can also be found in the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel in how we recite Kriya Shema. We have a very famous machlokes, every child knows halacha, when do you recite Kriya Shema? It says in the pasuk, you shall say Kriya Shema b'shach b'cha uvikumecha, when you lie down and when you get up. According to Beis Shammai, when you recite Kriya Shema shel shachar, get up. You have to stand. You have to stand up uvikumecha while you are standing. According to they, and at night, you have to say when you're lying down in your bed. Beis Hillel disagrees. He says, kidarko, you say Kriya Shema. How should your body present itself when you're saying Kriya Shema? However you want. You can sit, you can stand, you can sit. It doesn't make any difference. And Pumpakel, you should not go out of your way to do what it says in the pasuk. That's not what it means. It means when you're at the Zman Shriva, Zman Kima. So a person who's devoted his whole life to body language looks at this Machlekes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel and says, this is a fundamental disagreement on the significance of how far a person should go with their body when they're Mekayim a mitzvah. The mitzvah is when you get up, when you lie down, is the Torah telling us, use your body as an expression of saying Kriya Shema to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The way you say Kriya Shema to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is by getting up. That's, your body also has to express the Kabbalah Sol Malach HaShemayim. The body rises. The body rising is a form of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Einan Milvado. The body lies down. That's an expression of subjugating yourself, of humiliating yourself, bringing yourself down to the Lord HaKadosh Baruch Hu when you lie down. It's not just a position to be in. The Torah wants you to say Kriya Shema when you're standing. The Torah wants to say Kriya Shema when you're lying down. No! That's a very superficial way of understanding the pasuk. Beis Shammai is saying the body has to say Kriya Shema. You say Kriya Shema with your mind, but your body also has to express the Kriya Shema by standing up. You stand to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you express yourself. You have to humble yourself for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have to lie down. Beis Hillel says, no, that's not what the Torah wants. The Torah doesn't want the body. The Torah wants the mind. And therefore, it doesn't make a difference which position your body in. Beis Hillel is coming to downplay the significance the body plays in its service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at least in Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shemayim. Okay, obviously there's a lot more to be developed in this idea, to refine, but it's just throughout this Rosh Hashanah that I was able to glean quickly reading through this chapter. It's a whole new way. You know, you're an expert in a certain field, you look at the Chazal, and you have a whole new appreciation, a whole new way of looking at things. Okay, let's go to another idea. I marked off some of the pages here, like folding them. Let's see what I got here. Okay, David HaMelech. David HaMelech, we learned this in Divrei Hayom, and it's also in Shmuel, it's called Adinoi Ha Eitzani. Code word for David. We learned in Divrei Hayom there was a person whose name was Adino, Ayin Dalit, Ayin Adino, Ho Eitzoni. So simply refers to a person, one of David's warriors. He was one of the warriors of David who fought a major battle against the Pelishtim. But Chazal tell us that this refers to none other than David HaMelech himself. Why was David called Adino Ho Eitzoni? When he learned Torah, he was Odin, Adino, delicate. He was very soft, meek. He humbled himself before his Rebbe. His body coiled, was very delicate. But when he went to war, he became ho'etzani. He became solid like a piece of wood, gevura. You see here another idea in Chazal that the way a person's body, Torah is using different descriptions of the body, the position of the body, to bring out an idea, to convey an idea of how a person has to behave in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu at different stages, different events in his life. Okay, let's go to another short idea. Let's talk about shaking hands. Okay, body language, you shake a hand. he has the whole complicated analysis. There are four types of handshaking. I don't understand. This is way beyond me. There's a loose hand. There's a tight shaking. There's a shaking with two hands. He shakes him with two hands. And then there's this, sometimes children do, there's a type of shaking, different types of handshaking. Where does it matter? He writes, he says here that it's a universal custom. The whole world, Mikotz El Kotz, the way you greet a person is by shaking their hand. Where does it come from? So he suggests it comes from the Pasuk. We say this on Rosh Hashanah. Kol Ho'amim Tiku Kof. Now what does that mean simply? All nations shall join together. Tiku Kof literally means they shall join together. The Malbum says, what does it mean, Tiku Kof? It means all of the nations, they shook hands in their agreement to join forces to harm Klal Yisrael. To come together, they're being to bring harm. In other words, it's in the United Nations, and they're planning, and the way they conclude their agreement is they shake hands. Tiku Kof doesn't mean anything very more. You see, all Makar in Chazal, you use your body, you shake hands to show that you are a partner, you're going to connect with one another in order to embark on a joint mission. He brings down from Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach a fascinating insight that Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach told, it's printed, that originally among Klal Yisrael, you're not allowed, it's not proper to shake hands every day. You don't shake hands with people. In fact, we always go back to the fetal principle. The ideal place for your hands to be is to keep your hands to yourself. Don't let your hands expand. The minute used to be, he writes, I think he quotes the Chazon Ish. He quotes the Chazon Ish also, you only shake someone's hand when they come back from a trip from far away or at a time of simcha. On Shabbos, you don't shake someone's hand. Your hands are not hefker. Your hands are meant to be kept to yourself. I guess when a person is away and he comes back, you use your hand to bring the person back. That's what a hand, a yad is, to take. The purpose of a hand is to take. When you have a friend and he goes away for a year, a month, 2 months, and he comes back, the way you greet your friend is by shaking his hand. Because when you shake his hand, what you're doing is, welcome back. I'm taking you back. You don't shake someone's hand when you say goodbye. Because a hand is used to take. A hand is not used to send away. Adrabah, sending away with a hand is not a good thing. You don't push someone away. So you don't say goodbye with a handshake. You say hello with a handshake, because hello, a hand is a yad, which is to clasp, is to bring close, to bring in, and that's the proper time. This, the Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, says that's the only proper time to shake someone's hand, when they come back, or at a time of simcha. Why a simcha? Because maybe the simcha, you're acquiring something new. A chasen kala, it's a time of acquisition. A simcha, a child, a bris, it's a time of acquisition. But when you say, Kenyan, but a time of going away, it's not the proper time. The Chazon Ish says a person should be very careful, should not always shake hands. They don't actually shake. They don't always shake their hands.
But the secular reason for shaking hands is to show that you're not carrying a weapon.
Aha, uh-huh. Your hands are... Okay, interesting.
To show when you meet somebody... Yeah.
No, interesting, fast. Not, okay. Okay, good, okay. He tries very hard to stay away from secular either. Now let's talk about closing your fists. There's a very famous medrash. The medrash says that a child is born with his hands clasped. And when a person dies, a person leaves the world, they leave the world with their hands open. What's the Musar Haskel? The Musar Haskel is when a person is born, closing your fingers means to take. You come into this world with a kavana, I will conquer the world. I will take the whole world into my possession. When a person leaves this world, his hands are open as if to say, what did I take from this world? Nothing. I left empty-handed. So a child has closed hands, a mace has open hands. So I once heard a drush, when you bring a karban, there are two types of karbanos. There's a mincha, and there is a zevach. When you do a mincha, what do? You put your open your hand in, and you close your fist. and you collect the flour, and you throw the, you put the flour on the mizbech. When you do shechita and you do kabbalah, you do zrika. What do you do with zrika? You dip your finger into the blood, and you apply it with an open hand. What's the meaning? A zevach is sacrifice. It's death. I should really give up my life to Hashem. I should be the dead man. But instead, I bring the animal as a replacement. Therefore, the blood is applied to the mizbech with an open hand. Mincha, when you bring a meal offering, bread is the staple of life. Life is when a child comes into this world, his hands are closed tight. When you give a mincha, you are saying, Hashem, I want to serve you alive. I serve you with life,
yeah,
not with death. So this idea, this medrash, just follows over as another layer to the way we bring different types of... When a person is born, his hands are closed. Because closed hands is symbolic of life. That's the position a child's hands are in when they're born, an infant. It represents, I'm going to conquer the world. Death is empty. When you bring a karban, when you want to give up your life to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you apply blood to the mizbech. Blood is applied to the mizbech with an open hand. A kenitza, a mincha, which is bread, food, which is life, is applied by closing the hand. A kenitza is to close the fist, which represents the concept of life. You serve Hashem by living, and you serve Hashem through sacrifice. Okay, let's go to another idea, the thumb. The thumb, in America, thumbs up is a good... Today, you know, you have to be blind, not to know Facebook, or like... going to like me, to be my friend. You know what I'm talking about? Thumbs up. Are we in the same generation here? What?
The gladiators.
Yeah.
They would vote whether thumbs up or thumbs down, whether the person should die or...
Right. Oh, so it's okay. Okay, you can't bring a riot from the gladiators in Halacha. But you're right. But in Mishnah Berurah, it's a very interesting Halacha. The thumb up is not a good sign. Believe it or not, in America, it's a very fascinating thing. The whole world today is obsessed with Facebook. I mean, social media, and the symbol in social media is thumbs up. I like it. I'm your friend. It's an amazing concept. In Mishnah Berurah quotes. I don't know if I can find the Mishnah Berurah. I marked it off. When you daven Shemona Esrei, it's an amazing thing. You daven Shemona Esrei, Mishnah Berurah says, you're supposed to keep your thumbs in your palm. Because when your thumb is up, a thumb represents the koyach of the conquer. Let me give you an example. In the beginning of Sefer Yoshua, the first time you learn Nach, it's a very bizarre, it's a very violent parak. First, Yoshua, he conquers the 31 kings. What does he do to them?
He chops off
their thumbs. Right? Remember the first time you learned, 9th grade, 8th grade, 7th grade, you chop off gruesome. Why did he chop off their thumbs? Because if you chop, the thumb is necessary to hold. If you don't have a thumb, you cannot grasp something. The thumb, because they don't want to play the music, they don't want to play the musical instruments. It's the dexterity of man lies in the thumb. They say that animals don't have thumbs. What makes man different over an animal is animals don't have any real thumbs. The only one that has a thumb, the concept of a thumb, they have a full thumb?
Yeah.
A regular full thumb?
That's how he climbs.
They have a regular full thumb. Okay, so monkey is the exception, but generally speaking, animals do not have a thumb. It shows the uniqueness of man, his skill, his dexterity is the thumb. When Yoshua, when they cut off the thumbs, it wasn't just because symbolically they're telling them, okay, we don't want you to hold weapons, you're a threat to us. We don't want you to push the button, send off all the missiles. That's not what cutting off the thumb was, because if they can't use their thumbs, they'll figure out another way to hold the weapons. Okay, of course, part of the shot is they cut off their thumbs. But cutting off a thumb means you're subhuman. We're reducing you. You're our slaves. You're not together human beings. You have not fulfilled the role that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has granted you in this world. You're not doing what you're meant to be done, and therefore you're not a human being. You're an animal. We're reducing you to below. Therefore, a thumb represents, I am a yesh. I am a great person. I am a significant. I'm an Adam Chashav. And what did Yeshua do? So to take away a person's kovod ha'adam, his dexterity, his gaiva, of what you could accomplish with koichi ve'oitzim yadi is the thumb. It's symbolic in the thumb. Therefore, when you come and you daven before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Mishnah Berurah says, he quotes very early sources, you don't come before Hashem with gaiva. When you come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, part of your body language before HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hide your thumb. I don't want to see your thumb, because your thumb is, I'm a yesh. I'm a person that has dexterity, that can accomplish, that I can do, that has koyach. So hide your thumb. And I don't, all the kings, they cut off the thumbs. You're not people. You're nothings. It's amazing. I'm going to repeat that this generation, the symbol. If you want to go tell me, you know, every year they have the word of the year. They have they always have the new words. What is the symbol of the generation? The symbol. There's no doubt about it. The symbol of this generation is the thumb. Thumbs up. Because we live in a world that is defined by social media. And the symbol of social media is the thumbs up. And that is an incredible form of body language, which Chazal have a very negative attitude towards. This goes to show that society, secular society, is not in agreement with everything which go with the Torah. The Torah has a whole different view of putting what it means to put your thumb up. Okay, now he has a lot more discussion about babies. Babies have a tendency, infants have a tendency to put their thumb in their palm. Okay, look next to look at an infant. That is the tendency. In fact, he brings down that psychologists and people who are professionals in raising children, they advise, I don't know, I want to tell this to your parents, they advise parents to rub the back of a child's hand in order that the child should open up his hand and extend his thumb. It's a sign of maturity for the child to develop where he no longer puts his thumb in his hand. Because putting your thumb in your hand represents a degree of insecurity. When a baby is born, a baby is scared. A baby feels like he's overwhelmed by the environment. That is why everything always goes back to the fetal principle. The way a person is, the body position a person finds himself in when he's a fetus is the ultimate position. When a child is in the fetal position, his hands are clenched, his thumbs are in his palm because he feels helpless. He feels he has no yesh. He has no security. When your thumbs are open, it means I can take care of myself. I can guide my own destiny. So that's a sign of maturity when the child is able to release the thumb from his hand. It's a mitzvah that children suck their thumbs. What is the psychological in here? Sucking their thumbs? They're eating themselves. They really, because the thumb, I don't get it, just throwing out Rashi Prakim it says a lot about a person, the thumb. It's their dexterity, it represents themselves, and a child is self-centered to a certain degree, and the child feels that he can eat him. He's in love with himself when he eats himself and he sucks his thumb. And why am I telling you this? Because who sucked their thumb? Who was the first one that we know in Chazal to suck their thumb? Avraham Avinu.
Yeah.
Yes, this was in that Sefer Hadiyas, it was in Medrash. I'm Avinu when he was 3 years old, when we were born. Nimrod saw in the stars that Avram Avinu would one day, the child of Terach, would one day come and destroy, take away everything from Terach, and he was goyzer that Avraham had to be killed. And did not know who it would be, so he had all the male children killed. He was like Paro, Kol Abein Hayilod Hayoret Hashlichua V'Kol Abas Techayun. And then after more research, he was able to pinpoint that it was Avraham who would be the one that would take away his malchus. And he approached Terach and he demanded from Terach, you hand over your son Avraham. At this point in time, the Medrash says that Terach's wife was pregnant, and she was hidden in a cave. And Avraham was born hidden, concealed in a cave, and he was there for 13 years. What did Avraham eat? So for the first 3 years, he sucked his thumb, says in the Medrash, and Hashem brought about a miracle where his thumb produced milk. He produced milk, and he was able to survive from that nourishment that he was able to suck out of his thumb. So it's an amazing thing. You have here none other than Avraham Avinu was sucking his thumb. if the Medrash is telling us this, there's obviously very great depth in this concept of the thumb. The thumb represents yourself. It's who I am. It's my essence. Avraham was able to preserve himself through himself. Avraham or Ivri, I don't need the world. I don't need them. I don't need society. I can be happy with myself knowing that there's a Ribbono Shel Olam. Avraham was able to sustain himself in himself. And that's why this was symbolized in the first few years of his life. He was able to eat, consume food from his own thumb. A child, when he sucks his thumb, is trying to do the same thing, is trying to make himself happy from himself, not coming on to the influences of the world. Therefore, when a person gets older and sticks out his thumb, what he's really saying is, you're showing who you are, yourself. It's me. It's who I am. And when you dive in, you have to hard your thumb not to... when you hard your thumb, you have to humble yourself. Putting your thumb in your hand is a symbol of humility. Okay, let's just go to a few more ideas, quick ideas. Putting your hands in your pockets. Okay, so they had recently a video of Rav Eliashiv. I didn't see the video. Did anyone see the video of Rav Eliashiv? It's a 2-hour video. It was advertised all over the place at Chalavod event. So I didn't, but someone, I heard someone speak about the video, so he said something, he said about in the video, if you notice in the video of Eliashiv, there's a lot of footage, he never put his hand, he always had his hands like this. Always had his hand, when he was learning, always put his hands like this. He never put his hands below his waist. So this person that was talking, he was saying that if you paid attention, it wasn't an accident. That by very holy people, they're very, very careful not to put your hand below your waist, because they're very sensitive to that part of the body. He brings that from Kelm. I just find this very interesting. Kelm was a Musar yeshiva. They specialize in very serious Musar. There was a Bachar that used to put his hand in his pocket. And they threw him out of the yeshiva because of, can you imagine that? They were thrown out of the yeshiva because you put your hand in your pocket. After a number of days, he was allowed back into the yeshiva, and the Bachar still did not understand why he was thrown out of the yeshiva. And they said to him, how could he be so drunk? That was the word. I don't know exactly. But there is something, there is a Jewish concept. It's not the right thing to do to walk around with your hands in your pocket. It is a sign of a lack of kedusha. Chazal give that part of the body below the waist a great degree of sensitivity, and putting your hands below that part of the body, it's a body motion, a body expression, which is not viewed very favorably among Chazal. Now, one other thing I left out about the bow and the thumb is Chazal. Yeah.
What about people walk with their hands behind their back?
He discussed that at great length. What does that mean? Is that proper? Is that not proper? I don't know. I didn't really wasn't able to really to clarify what he means. Okay, one other quick thing about the bohen. I had it over here, the thumb. Bohen is related to the word kohen. We have kohanim here. Kohen and bohen. And bohen. Let me just quote you the source. Let me tell you. Where is this? Here, Rav Shamshon Fal Hirsch. Okay, this is an amazing insight. Rav Shamshon says that a kohen, it says v'hu kohen, this week's parasha, v'hu kohen, this week's parasha, you know, the v'hu kohen lekel elyon. First time we have the word kohen. Malki tzedek melech shalom hotzi lechem v'yad v'hu kohen lekel elyon. First time the word kohen appears in the Torah, this week's parasha. Rav Shamshon Fal Hirsch, what is this funny word kohen? Can we take it for granted? Okay, what's this funny word kohen? So the word kohen comes from the word bohen. The chof and the beis are very similar. They're interchangeable. that there are certain letters that are interchangeable because they sound alike, and there are certain letters that are interchangeable because they look alike.
Yeah.
The base, now we have a base, the way we have a base today in the same Torah, the bottom part of the base extends further. But that's not required. If you were Sofer, you were Magia, we discussed the rules of Sofer a little bit. If you were Sofer, Me'ikar Hadin, the base does not need an extension on the bottom. If you have a base in the Sefer Torah that's a square on the bottom, and there is no extension to the right, it just comes down to a square, a perfect square on the bottom, corner on the bottom, 45 degree angle, it's 100% kosher. And in fact, that really, according to many opinions, that's the ideal way to write the letter beis. So what then is the difference between a beis and a chaf? A beis is curved. The only difference between the beis and the chaf is the chaf. It could be that even the chaf, you don't even need them both to be curved. You only need the top. Mikra, I did. I think only a chaf. You need the top. If the top of the bottom of the chaf is square and the top is curved, I'm not sure. I don't remember exactly. But it could be it's also kosher. So the only real difference between the beis and the chaf is a little teeny dot of ink on the top part of the beis. That differentiates the beis and the chaf. Now we have a principle in halacha in drush that letters which are similar in appearance can be interchanged for the purpose of drush. And that's all over. So our Shamshin Falhirsch takes this a step further and he says, you know what the word Kohen means? Kohen means Bohen. It means the thumb. What is the thumb? Well, the thumb represents a person's dexterity, control. A thumb is what stands out from the person's finger. The thumb represents the person's way of expressing himself. A Kohen has all of those milas. The Kohen is the one that makes the decisions for Klal Yisrael. He exercises control. He looks at the other four fingers, the other things that are being done, and he goes and he controls, he gives it the final stamp of approval. The thumb stands out. The Kohen is the leader. He is the public representative of Klal Yisrael. The thumb represents the person's self. The Kohanim, they are the representatives. They are the self. They are the Yesh. They are the personality. They are the personality of Klal Yisrael. All of the midos of the thumb can be found in the Kohen. So it was an amazing thing that's where the word Kohen comes from. It comes from nothing more than body expression. Body motion, body expression, body image is the thumb. Thumb is an incredible form. That is what the Kohen for Klal Yisrael is. Okay, that's another decade. There are other ideas. We'll see. Maybe we'll do more tomorrow, maybe not. But at least to give you a little appreciation of the Sefer, a few chapters of In His Image by Rav Eldad Nakar. Have a wonderful day.